This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
In 1960, the Everly Brothers recorded a song called Love Hurts. And as many of us know, it can and often does. That idea is certainly at the heart of Dirty Love, a new book from author André Debus III. Dirty Love is a collection of four novellas about the dark side, the complicated side, the painful side of love. They're stories about need, control, betrayal, and sex, but also about hope, maybe even about redemption. They're also stories about people who seem touchingly real. André Debus lives in Newburyport. He's the author of House of Sand and Fog and his memoir, Townie. His new book is Dirty Love. And André, good to have you back on Radio Boston.
Well, thanks for having me, Anthony. It's great to be here.
And congratulations on this beautiful book.
Thank you. Tell me
briefly what links these four novellas.
Oh, desire, loss, hope, weakness. You know, here I'm in my 50s now, and I've finally come to the conclusion as to why we're on the planet. You want to hear the secret?
Yes.
Okay. I just think we're here for one reason. Well, two reasons, but the main reason I think we're here is to learn how to love and be loved.
Mm.
I think that's it. Mm. And it ain't easy.
It ain't easy. Well, these stories bring that out so touchingly. What I always love about your writing is you write about people who are flawed, but they're so touchingly believable and human. And I find myself liking a lot of what they do, but then understanding why they do it.
Mm, good.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Well, it sort of reflects my view, you know. I mean, I hear that a lot, you know, that my characters are flawed, but I don't know a human being who's not. Mm. I sure as hell am flawed, and I'm just trying to capture these people as fully as I possibly can, and I think if a writer does that, the people will start to feel real, and what's real are what's not right about us, not what's right about us. I mean, we all go to our jobs. We brush our teeth and pay our taxes and, you know, iron our clothes, and we all come across like we've got it all together, but I think we're really kind of all a mess. And I think it's okay to be a bit of a mess.
Right.
I really do.
Right.
I think it's okay to be a mess.
I want to talk about a couple of the stories. The first one is called Listen Carefully as Our Options Have Changed. It tells the story of Mark. He's a tech company project manager who discovers that his beautiful wife of 25 years is having an affair.
Mm.
And as I read it, I found myself sympathizing with him, sort of for obvious reasons, but then slowly you learn why the marriage foundered. You begin to understand what happened to his wife, why she went the route she went. So tell us a little bit about Mark.
Mark is sort of modeled after about four of my friends' marriages that have ended in divorce, and the symptom that's triggered the divorce has been infidelity, which is really interesting to me. I don't think the other woman or the other man is the cause of the problem. It's a symptom.
Yeah.
So with Mark, I was really drawn to trying to enter into the psyche of a man who, on the surface, really had it together. You know, upper middle class, drives a BMW sedan, is a very successful project manager, wears a Movado wristwatch, wears Tommy Bahama silk shirts, has a pool, a lovely wife who's miserable. So I was sort of siding with him, sympathizing with his pain as he wakes up on his mother's couch in the in-law apartment while his wife's got the house next to him and she's still cheating on him. But we discover that it's not so simple, and loving him and being loved by him wasn't so great for her either.
He's very controlling. In fact, he loves controlling people and molding and sculpting his wife.
And you know what, too, I discovered in that story is he's a project manager. And you know, I really do think that we bring our jobs home with us.
Mm.
And they really mold us. I know when I used to work construction, I would come home. I really was so physically exhausted, and the engineering side of my brain was so exhausted. All I wanted was a beer. I wanted to grunt and put on the remote. I mean, and then coming back from teaching, I'm talkative and I'm inspired, and I'm a different guy when I'm coming back from that. So if nothing else, I think that Mark's job really sort of shaped how he was at home and how he treated his human relationships. And while it was successful at work, it wasn't a successful way to be a partner with a grown woman.
It seems like it also reminds us of what we see on the surface of relationships, whether it's infidelity or other problems, that people's actions within relationships are only part of the truth about what's really going on.
Yeah, isn't that true?
Yeah.
You know, an actor friend of mine went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, and he did a performance, and the master actor pulled him aside and said, you know, Paul, that was a good performance, but it wasn't a great one. And then Paul said, well, why? I gave it everything I had. He said, well, I don't know what to tell you, buddy, except none of us are just one note. We are all a symphony. And to me, I love that line because it speaks to the multitudes that we all are at all times. And, you know, I think if I preach nothing else in my writing classes and when I give talks and et cetera, is that what might distinguish good writing from very good writing is you can sense whether the writer is really curious enough about the characters. I really think we have to be really curious about these people. Otherwise, we will perhaps judge them and typify them. And then they're not as real as they need to be.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of my favorite lines from all time is a Tom Waits song. And the line is, there ain't no devil, there's just God when he's drunk. And it's frankly my theology. I just believe we're all, I've never met a bad baby. We're all born full of light and love and needing to be loved. And then the rest of our lives are screwing it up and trying to get back where we've started.
Well, sticking with this first story, I love the way it ends because it left me wondering what Mark learns in the end. And I wanted to get you to read just a bit. This is the end of the story, starting in the middle of page 80 there.
He would apologize. And they would talk not about what had happened, only what had to happen next. Maybe they would reach over and touch. Maybe they would even kiss. Maybe Laura would stand and walk away as she had every right to do. Or she would softly squeeze his fingers and lead him back into their house and up to their room and into their bed, and they would make love, no matter what each of them had done earlier or with whom. And it would be different this time. He would pay more attention, and he would let her do whatever she wanted. Then and later, every day and every night and week and month, she chose to stay with him, which she might not. This woman whose footsteps he now heard through the door, his heart in his head once again, for he did not know if he was even up for any of this, this change from change, the door swinging inward as he straightened, his wife's face lovely and surprised and waiting.
Is he redeemed? Has he figured it out? Is it going to be okay? Or is he like dreaming and sort of, you lost your chance with this one, buddy?
Well, a woman friend of mine read it and said, oh, he's so deluded. Are you kidding me? She's going to shut the door right in his face. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe she won't. I'm kind of rooting for the making love part later.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's great. So I want to ask you a little bit about the third story, The Bartender. Again, it deals with the theme of infidelity. The protagonist is Robert. He's a bit of a chronic philanderer. He finally finds love and the goodness of a new wife, Althea. She gets pregnant, but he can't stay loyal. He has an affair. But again, I found myself not liking what he does, but feeling sort of tender about him. I don't know why.
I'm so glad to hear that. You know,
what's your view?
Well, the truth is, I think he's a scoundrel and he's not likable at all, but he's lovable. You know, and I look at characters that way. The way you look at your drunk uncle who's done a little time.
Yeah.
You know, he's really interesting. You don't really like him. He's rude and talks too much and drinks too much at Thanksgiving, but you really love your Uncle Harry. I think with Robert, he seemed to embody this. Well, Freud, let's talk about Sigmund Freud, right? So Freud talked about
Eros.
It always comes back to Freud. Eros, right? Eros is life force. He said, but in all of us, there's not only erotic energy, which is life energy, the kind that creates and goes to work and does good things. There's also Thanatos, the death instinct, that walking hand in hand with our erotic life force, positive creative energy is this death energy. To me, Robert in The Bartender has just got a good healthy dose of that oblivion, of that oblivion-seeking part of him. And I frankly see it in us all. I know it's in me. I know that I can have a certain amount of panic when things go too well. And, you know, I try not to sabotage things, but he's really got it.
What's the I'm curious when you write these stories, if you know who these guys are and where they're taking you, or do you learn
It's the opposite, and I'll tell you, man, whenever I've had too much foreknowledge, it's because I'm contriving it, and it's always wooden and false.
So interesting.
It really feels like things might be working when I have no control at all, and I'm not even writing about people I want to write about.
Then
something real might happen.
It's so interesting. Well, it sure feels real. You know, the last time we talked, it was about your wonderful memoir, Townie, and you said something about your father that has really stuck with me. Because in describing your childhood, if one reads the memoir, I think people could be forgiven from thinking that your father, it must have been tough on you kids because of some choices that your father made. And I asked you about that, and you just said, you know, he was the best person that he knew how to be.
Yeah.
Which was just an extraordinarily compassionate statement, and it's what I feel in these characters.
Well, thank you.
So it's really hard to kind of focus on the flaws and say, boy, did he really screw things up, and why did he decide to do that, and he should have done that, and why was he unfaithful, and it's all bad stuff, but it's like, they're trying.
Yeah, you know, and thank you for saying that. You know, I heard a rock and roller say, I think it was George Thorogood. Someone asked him, hey, Mr. Thorogood, why do you play the kind of rock and roll you do? He said, because I grew up listening to garage rock and roll, and I like to play what I like. So I'm bringing this up because I'm a sucker as a reader for that kind of fiction that does not judge its characters, that does not lampoon them or parody them or use them to make points. I actually find it to be unethical and really off-putting. I do think the job of the writer, as Hemingway said, is not to judge but to seek to understand. And in that seeking, you know, there may be forgiveness. I'll tell you what, I haven't met a person yet who doesn't screw up daily. May our screw-ups be small. Yeah, I do think my father did the best he knew how, which is not the best he could have done, which is the same for me.
Yeah.
As a father and a husband, I'm trying to do the best I know how to do, given all the tangled web of forces that have made me in the last 54 years. But I know I can do better.
Last question, and it's just about the big, broad subject of love. I started this introduction talking about this concept of love hurts, love can hurt. The title of this book is Dirty Love. It sort of examines the darker side of love. What's your view?
Well, love? You know, my view is largely formed from marriage and family on my own, as a father and a husband. More, I think, than having been a son and a brother and a friend. And again, I try not to think this and then inject into the stories, but I think the stories are reflecting what I believe. I think we are at our best when we love out of true caring. If you look at the word love, Rollo May wrote Love and Will 40 years ago. The opposite of love is not hatred. The opposite of love, if love is caring, the opposite of love is apathy. So the saints among us really love well on a regular basis. They really love with caring. But I think the rest of us get understandably needy, and we begin to love less out of caring than a need for something to come our way, a gratification. And I think when you throw in addictions like alcohol, et cetera, it just gets muddier and muddier. And that's the world we live in.
Well, André Debus III lives in Newburyport. His latest book is a collection of novellas called Dirty Love. And André, thanks so much for coming in, and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Anthony.